The Spider, the Cholera King, 6, Chapter 6. The man in scarlet Wentworth lowered the unconscious girl to the floor, loosened the throat of her dress and went about restoring her. As he worked, he glanced now and again toward the ugly diagrams that blotted the fresh wall, particularly the first, which showed a victory for the X symbol. Always before, these diagrams had marked the death of a man. There were bloodstains on the floor here, and yet Wentworth did not believe Bucarnes was dead. To Wentworth, it seemed that this might confirm the theory that Daly had been killed to release his subway holdings. Now, the murderer wished to hold Carnes prisoner to learn certain facts about Daly's holdings, or to prevent his making public some incriminating information. Wentworth cleared his throat and was suddenly aware that the air of the room seemed very dry and hot. His thoughts, too, would not run smoothly, but persisted in pursuing a numbing circle. An oath rose to Wentworth's lips, but made no sound. He turned from the girl, stumbled toward the window, hands reaching before him. Ridiculous that the spider should be caught in any such obvious trap as this. Narcotic gas. That was what it was. Narcotic gas. The floor. He was lying. On the floor. Gas. Vision began to return to Wentworth very slowly, and that seemed to be far ahead of his other senses. Before he could hear, or even feel except for a numb tingling over his entire body, he could see that damnable face, bony and affrighting as a living mummy, peering down at him. Presently, he could tear his gaze away from those blazing eyes and see that the man had a great bald dome of a head and that, from neck to toe, he wore a scarlet robe. Wentworth saw also that the face was strangely without expression. "Ah, my friend," the man said, his voice high-pitched and harsh. "You were looking for William Carnes, were you not?" Wentworth heard himself answering, his voice dull and lifeless. Yes, that word had come from him without volition on his part, and the fact startled and then terrified him. He knew something of drugs that left a man helpless, though in possession of his faculties they robbed him of the will to refuse to obey commands or to answer questions. There were a number of them. The man must have glimpsed the horror in Wentworth's face, for his eyes, burning and large, gloated down upon him. "Now then," he purred, "you'll will tell me just what the police and yourself have discovered and what you plan to do." Helpless to stop himself, Wentworth heard his lifeless voice talking, telling this man about raids and their suspicions concerning the tit-tat-toe murders and the connection between them and the plague. Sweat stood out coldly on Wentworth's forehead, and he could feel the grip of the drug like a cold weight on his brain. The man bent closer, his great burning eyes fierce and menacing. "Now then, my dear Wentworth," his harsh voice rasped, "you will tell me the best way to kill your friend, Kirkpatrick." He must have glimpsed Wentworth's desperate efforts to muster his will, for he laughed and the sound of his mirth was like a file biting glass. "Oh, yes, you will. For instance, I wish to know the name of Kirkpatrick's favorite drink which he keeps in his bedroom and what time it will be easiest to chide his servants and replace it with poisoned liquor." Wentworth willed himself to lie about those facts, which he knew as intimately as the routine of his own home. If he could only falsify the facts, this man or his henchmen would be captured at their work. Wentworth told himself fiercely that this man was not only the tit-tat-toe murderer, but the master of the plague. His scarlet robe was a taunt. "Come, come, my friend," the man snapped sharply. "If I have to give you another injection of scopolamine, it may prove fatal. Not that I'm concerned. I shall merely gas you again when I'm through questioning you, and when you awake a second time, you will have the pleasure of knowing that you enabled me to kill your friend. I think that will be much nicer than killing you, eh, Wentworth? For I can kill you any time. This way I may enjoy your suffering. I fear I am a bit of a sadist, eh?" And once more the high-pitched, awful laughter grated on Wentworth's eardrums. The man in scarlet bent closer, hissed, "Tell me, now, how to kill your friend." Wentworth's lips and tongue formed the answers to the man's questions, but no sounds came from his throat. He had set his teeth hard upon his lips and was rasping them together, harder, harder. He felt a blessed stab of pain through his tongue. The man bent over, struck him savagely on the face, and the blow helped further to throw off the effects of the drug. Wentworth opened his mouth and laughed. "Strike me," he cried, "strike me. Do you think you can make me talk that way?" The man hit him again. Then he cursed, and from under his robe, drew forth a small, leather case from which he took a hypodermic needle and a small, opaque bottle. He thrust the needle through the rubber cap, filling the barrel of the instrument. He laughed a little as he worked, his eyes never leaving Wentworth. "It's too bad that I must inject you again," he chortled. "I would have liked so much to watch you after Kirkpatrick was dead." The needle was ready and he knelt beside Wentworth, picked up his arm. Wentworth tried to jerk his arm free, but his muscles responded sluggishly, without power. He felt the prick of the needle. "Stop," he panted. I'll talk. Could he muster false information now? His brain ached with the effort to think, with a heaviness that was intolerable. The subconscious portion of his brain and his memory was perfect, but brain work was almost impossible. "Talk," the man ordered softly. "The liquor your friend prefers. The hours when his home may safely he entered?" Wentworth's head rolled sluggishly from side to side with the effort at thought. God, he must not die like this. He did not shrink from death, but he could not go without taking this repulsive monster with him. Wild laughter pumped up from his chest. "Kill me, damn you," he panted. "Kill me. I won't. Talk." He saw murderous fire burn in the eyes of his captor, saw the man's whole body tense with the desire to plunge home that needle to kill Wentworth after he had talked a while and doomed his friend to die also. "Kill me," Wentworth panted. "I'll still have to kill you. First." He saw the man leap abruptly to his feet and whirl away from him. There was a crashing explosion that hurt his eardrums and suddenly the room was plunged in darkness. The explosion came again, and a third time. Then a soft hand was on his forehead. A woman was sobbing somewhere in the darkness near him, and the explosion blasted once more. He recognized it now heavy automatic. It sounded like one of his own. "Oh, please, Mr. Wentworth," the woman wailed, and he knew that it was Evelyn Daly. "Oh, please. I can carry you and I'm afraid the gun is empty now." "That man in scarlet, the man with the awful face." "Break out the windows," Wentworth whispered. Was he mad or did he hear the thin, wailing voices of sirens? Could they be coming already? Why? He heard glass crash and the sirens were louder. But Evelyn couldn't have reached the window yet. His conception of time must be entirely wrong. Yes, that was one of the effects of the drug, he remembered. The blessed freshness of the air washed over him, and now the girl was back beside him. "Slap my face," he ordered weakly. "Slap it, hard, over and over." Evelyn Daly was sobbing as she swung her palms against his cheeks, again and again. She screamed and a man laughed the high-pitched rasping laugh of the man in scarlet. A great, burning anger swept through Wentworth and abruptly he was on his feet, groping in the darkness. His hands touched silk. He laughed crazily. "Damn you," he breathed. "Now, die." He found a throat and light blazed into his face. "Drop it," a man cried, and Wentworth stared into the light that came from the window and down at his hands. He had Evelyn Daly by the throat. He released her, helped her to her feet. "I thought I had the man in scarlet," he said, his tongue moving thickly. "Accept my apologies, Miss Daly." She laughed wildly, clung to Wentworth for strength, and the policeman's blue-clad legs came scissoring across the beam of light. "It's all right, officer," she informed him hoarsely. "A man drugged us and we were fighting him in the dark when Mr. Wentworth got me by mistake." "Wentworth?" cried the officer. "The commissioner has been hunting you for hours, sir. He wants you to call in right away to headquarters. It's something about your plane, sir, crashed, I think." Wentworth reeled and the last of the drug evaporated. His plane crashed. Then Nita? He got to a telephone in an adjoining apartment where a man and woman stared at him and the policeman with wide eyes. The Northrop had been found near Danbury, Connecticut, a flame-destroyed wreck. A broken wing with a number on it, saved from the fire, had identified it. There was no trace of a body in the wreck. Wentworth gripped the telephone tightly in his hands. "You're sure of that last, Kirk?"
"Yes, Dick, certain.
I thought Nita came back with you." Wentworth dragged a hand over his forehead, through his hair.
"No, the master of the plague has Nita, I'm afraid. But I don't understand the plane wreck. That broken wing shows they wanted it identified and yet they haven't notified me that they have Nita, and I was just talking with the master of the plague."
Wentworth's mind was still not entirely clear, but by the time he had finished telling about his experience with the man in scarlet, his brain was working swiftly again.
"Thanks for the news about the plane," he said finally.
"No, I won't be down to headquarters. My plans?" He laughed harshly.
"I'm going to find the master of the plague again and turn him over to the police."
When he went back to the apartment, Evelyn Daly clung to him. He thanked her gravely for saving his life and she smiled pitifully.
"I just came back to consciousness from my faint and saw that man in scarlet sticking a hypodermic into your arm. You were whispering to him to kill you.
Whispering. Wentworth laughed.
I thought I was shouting at him.
Evelyn shook her head.
I saw your guns on the floor and I picked one up and shot it. I never shot one before and I had to hold it in both hands. I'm afraid I didn't hit anything.
Wentworth looked at the walls and smiled slightly, seeing where B bullets had hit. But there was no mirth in his soul. His thoughts centered on Nita and that burned ship. What could it mean? If the plane had caught fire in the air, Nita would have used her parachute.
Evelyn Daly's hands were tugging at his lapels.
Oh, Mr. Wentworth, she whispered.
Where's Bill?
Wentworth smiled into her anxious face.
He's alive.
He assured her if they killed him, they would have left his body here.
The girl tried to smile, but her head bowed and she strangled on a sob. She straightened and her eyes went to the diagrams on the wall.
Wentworth felt her body go tense under his arm. Her shoulders came back and her chin lifted.
They can't get away with this, she whispered.
They just can't.
Wentworth walked slowly through the rooms. He found a pallet Carnes had made with blankets, found a few tins of canned goods and a loaf of bread beside it, all of them untouched. The man in scarlet then, had not been lying in wait for Carnes, but had arrived shortly after him.
Wentworth returned to the living room and began to copy the diagrams from the wall. There was something queer about them which his partially drugged mind refused to recognize, unless it was. By God, the diagrams had been changed. There could be no doubt about it. Sometime after the narcotic gas had struck him, the diagrams had been changed, for he particularly remembered that the first diagram had had three crosses in a row, showing a victory for that symbol. He looked to the others, trying to detect any changes in them, but his memory was not equal to the feat. It seemed to Wentworth as he made a painstaking transcription that these diagrams were a little simpler than those he had seen previously. He found, for instance, one symbol appearing in each of the five diagrams, the symbol XL. This was no time for dabbling in ciphers. He pocketed the notebook, found Evelyn Daly's eyes fixed on him with painful intensity.
Do you know what they mean?
She asked, almost soundlessly.
Wentworth shook his head.
Each one is different, he said slowly.
I'm half inclined to think they tell the next victim of the murderer. Otherwise, I can see no purpose in them. If they were simply a signature to identify the killer, there would be no need of a series of diagrams, and they would be always the same.
He shrugged.
I do not even know whether the message is in the symbols, or in the lines which make the diagram. It might be either. Come, there's nothing further to be done here. I'll call police from downstairs.
Evelyn Daly went with him, but her footsteps were laggard.
I feel that I ought to stay here.
Perhaps, Bill.
Wentworth shook his head in determination.
You're going home, and then I.
The girl faced him, her blue eyes deeply quest
eyeing.
What are you going to do?
Will you find Bill?
If I can,
Wentworth told her, but his thoughts had not been upon Carnes. It was time for the spider to engage in the thick of the battle. He had given a warning there on the street when he pressed his seal to the foreheads of two dead men, and now. Wentworth's face held again the grim light which, earlier in the day, had frightened Evelyn Daly. It did not frighten her now. She seized his arm with both hands.
Oh, let me help,
she begged.
Let me help find Bill,
and
her voice rose, trumpeting.
Let me help you kill his enemies.
Wentworth studied her face.
Dead white it was, with the blazing blue of her eyes. Before, she had been only a hysterical girl, stunned by grief. She was suddenly a woman, now, and her hysteria was gone. She would fight until the very end for her love.
You'll get your chance to fight,
he promised her.
Go home and when the time comes, I'll call on you.
Meantime, you might try to work out the cipher.
Wentworth made 2 calls
when he stopped to phone the police. The second one was to his home, and Jenkins answered.
Why no? Master Dick,
the old man said,
I haven't heard from Miss Nita.
Was she supposed to call?
Is something wrong, sir?
Wentworth said quietly.
No, nothing is wrong, Jenkins.
He went outside and looked up into the pitch black sky. Clouds hung low in the heavens and there was the sultry promise of rain. To the northward hung the lurid glow of the corpse fires. Fully an hour ago, Nita should have lost the trail, or... His lips compressed. He did not speak once while Jackson drove them to the Daly home, barely acknowledged Evelyn's farewell. When the car rolled on again, he swiftly drew the curtains and dropped his hand to a button beneath the front edge of the left seat. That part of the seat slid soundlessly forward, revolving as it moved, revealing a closely hung wardrobe in its back. Wentworth folded upward a mirror ringed with brilliant neon lights and opened a tray of makeup materials. Before he went to work,
He caught up the speaking tube to Jackson.
Take me wherever the looting has been thickest, Jackson,
he said quietly.
The spider walks tonight.
Wentworth began his skillful work then, swiftly coating his cheeks with a collodion-like material which stretched the skin, taut, sallow and shiny, over his cheekbones. It covered his lips until his mouth became a mere straight gash. Under deft fingers, Putty built his nose into a predatory beak. That was all, except for the bushy brows and the lank black wig, but it changed the genial aristocratic face of Richard Wentworth into the sinister mask of the spider. This was the man from whom criminals shrank as from death itself, whose avenging hand meted out swift, unswerving justice. From the wardrobe, then, he drew out a broad-brimmed hat of black which slouched low over his eyes, threw a long black cape across his shoulders. He relaxed against the cushions, raised the curtains which shrouded his mobile dressing room and closed the wardrobe. The Daimler was speeding southward through the dark drives of Central Park. He glanced toward Jackson's broad shoulders, saw their tension. He could trust Jackson with his life. They had fought together in the World War, Major Wentworth and Sergeant Jackson, had saved each other's lives time and again. The Daimler was on Fifth Avenue, which at this time of evening should be flowing with a river of luxurious cars, bearing gay crowds to theaters and rich banquets. It was empty. A single taxi ripped past with a roaring motor and the wail of sirens was a perpetual, sharp overtone as police raced to scenes of looting or ambulances rushed to aid the dying. Jackson opened the glass panel that separated them.
All along here, Major, they've been looting, he said, still using the wartime title he preferred.
They've got double police guards tonight, I see.
The crooks have been stripping the apartments and the stores.
Maybe tonight,
he broke off as a burst of gunshots split the night.
The Daimler snubbed sharply to a halt.
Wentworth saw a policeman stagger blindly from a doorway where he had crouched. His arms were reaching straight up, his head wrenched back. It was plain that he was bullet-burned. As he stumbled, more bullets struck him, spinning him about, pounding his legs out from under him. Now, at last, Wentworth saw the spurts of red gun flame. The killers stood in a doorway the entrance of a jewelry store. Another policeman was approaching at a dead run, his whistle trumpeting. Bullets met him, shoved back his head while his legs still hurled forward. He struck heavily on his chest and the whistle gave a last, wailing blast before he floundered out his life in the gutter. These things had happened with the speed of motion picture shadows. Glass crashed as the crook smashed the plate glass window of the jewelry store, bold now that the police were dead. If they noticed the Daimler, they gave no heed. What citizen would dare? Wentworth was on the sidewalk, pacing steadily forward, a gun in each hand. He saw one of the crooks whirl about and he shot with an upward twitch on his wrist. The man whinnied out his dying breath and the second crook, halfway through the broken window, pivoted to meet the gunfire. Wentworth fired again, almost casually, saw his lead hammer the man back upon the broken shards of glass. The spider stood briefly over the two men, his lips thin. Two gallant policemen had died that these two might loot. That they had later died, too, would not bring back two honest men, but perhaps their death might furnish a warning. He pressed the seal of the spider hard to their foreheads, returned to the Daimler and pushed on. He realized with a grim horror the meaning of his quick and easy discovery of looters. It was not that he was lucky in his hunt. It meant that the town was so rife with these killing marauders that a man could not move along the streets without surprising them at their work. Well, with the dawn, the underworld would find something to check their bloodlust. They would find that the spider still could strike. Vengeance was not, however, his sole purpose this night. The plague had made this looting possible and there was a man behind the plague. If he were not directly involved in this plundering, then he would at least have a finger in the pie somewhere. He would not permit these carrion pickers to profit by his wholesale murder and not himself take a large share of the illicit gains. Perhaps, among the skulking jackals of the night, the spider could find one he could make to talk. It would be better if Ram Singh were here. Ram Singh had a nice talent for making reluctant criminals confess. Wentworth's thoughts flew to Nita, to Bill Carey's, snatched from the loving arms of that splendid girl. He thought grimly that perhaps he would not need Ram Singh's skill tonight. Jackson wheeled the Daimler off Fifth Avenue and prowled along the side streets. It had been nearly an hour since the encounter at the jewelry shop. The shortwave radio brought Wentworth the news that the spider was known to be abroad.
IT brought also the information that the city water supply had been shut off except in the fire hydrants. In the morning, the fire department and the police would work together to flush the sewers and to keep people from drinking the contaminated water while the firemen used it. Wentworth shook his head worriedly. There would be rioting. Profiteers would ask outrageous prices for bottled liquids. And nothing would be accomplished. The fire department could not hope to cleanse the sewers, to rid the city of that source of virulent infection. A woman's scream, soaring and frightened, jerked him to the pavement. It came from up there in the air somewhere. He spotted the source quickly. At an open window, a woman grappled with two men, but it was impossible for Wentworth to get a clear shot. The bodies shuttled about. Most of the girl's clothing was torn off. Her cries were prayers, frantic appeals. Wentworth flung himself toward the doorway of the house. For the moment the window was empty, then he saw the girl lunging toward it. She sprang upon the sill.
Wait! Wait!
Wentworth shouted.
Help is coming!
His shout was drowned in the sobbing scream of the girl as she plunged downward to the street, turning over slowly in the air, striking on her head. Up at the window, two men stared down. Wentworth's gun muzzles swiveled upward, but he did not fire. His lips stiff against his teeth, he reached the door of the house in long strides. He slashed out the glass with a gun, turned the bolt and went leaping up the stairs. Shooting was too good for those swine up there. Guns spat flame at him down the darkened stairwell. He did not pause to answer with his deadly gunfire, but went climbing silently toward them with a black cape flapping from his shoulders. His face was turned upward, bitter eyes questing for the men. They fled from the swift menace of his coming and Wentworth cornered them in the room where they had attacked the woman. He walked slowly toward the lighted doorway. He opened his lips and sent ahead of him the flat, mocking laughter that these crooks would know, the laughter of the spider.
The spider has come for you,
he called, his voice stabbing through the darkness. Within the room, the men screamed in panic. Their guns flung a hot flurry of lead through the door and Wentworth waited until it had stopped before he approached nearer. He played an old trick then, one that would not have fooled a smart boy. He thrust the crown of his hat, perched on the muzzle of a gun, beyond the casing of the door. Two more shots hammered at it, only one of which found its mark. Those, Wentworth knew, were their last shots. He dropped the hat, hurled himself into the room, his automatics level in his fists. The two men cringed against the wall of the room, drawing frightened arms tightly over their bellies, lifting a thigh as when a man shields himself from a hurled rock he cannot hope to dodge. Wentworth laughed at them, the same sinister sound which had thrown them into panic. One of the men dropped to his knees, groveling.
For God's sake, spider, don't kill us,
he begged, hoarsely, almost incoherent.
We was just robbing the dame.
You don't kill people for robbing, do you, spider?
Honest. We was just robbing.
Wentworth motioned with his gun barrel over to the window. Animals. The men screamed then, and the second one dropped to his knees also. The sight of them disgusted Wentworth. They sensed that he had come fully prepared to make them both leap from the window as they had forced the girl to do. Their cowardice was sickening.
You have an alternative,
he grated slowly.
How do you pay your share of the loot to the man behind the cholera?
Who is he?
The cries ceased abruptly.
The men were trembling. Inarticulate with a new fear.
No, no, spider?
One gabbled.
We can tell you that.
Honest to God, we can't.
A collector comes around. That's all we know.
Honest to God. The one who spoke got crouchingly to his feet. Wentworth eyed him sharply and the second man flung himself forward in a headlong dive for Wentworth's legs. Lead stopped him, pinned him to the floor, shattered his spine near the waist. He writhed, beating the floor. Screaming, his fists almost at Wentworth's toes. Slowly, the spider's gun came up to point at the second man's stomach. His lips twitched. The spider did not kill men in cold blood, he had not intended to smash this man's spine, but if ever men deserved a horrible death, these did. He would have to quiet this poor wretch on the floor with a second merciful bullet. A curse was forced out of him.
Damn you,
he cried.
Talk, or I'll...
The unhurt man staggered away with upthrown arms. The windowed sill slammed the back of his knees and with a wild cry, he pitched backward into space. Wentworth half sprang to the sill to catch him, then stopped, turning away with a twisted smile. Justice had been done. The man he had shot had ceased to scream. His breath whistled hoarsely in his throat and, even as the spider's cold gaze returned to him,
He shivered convulsively, once, twice, and was dead. Twice more the spider's seal was imprinted and he paused a moment, downstairs, beside the pitiful remains of what had been a young girl. His face was wrenched awry. God give him the privilege of finding many more of these beasts tonight. End of chapter 6.